episode 417, I think. I'm not going to correct myself. Asking, is it worth reading about three different comic books, including Samson, Pistol Fist, and what I consider to be the single greatest Christian faith-based-ish comic book I've ever read?
Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast.
Hey everyone, it's me, Ben Avery. You heard me recording that introduction where I didn't know the episode number. It doesn't even really matter anymore, does it? The episode numbers, I mean, Apple doesn't even use them with their podcast app. And, you know, it's not like this is a podcast where you have to listen to every single episode in order to understand what's going on. We're not a drama podcast. We're just talking about science fiction and fantasy and fun stuff like that. Right now I am recording in a hotel room. That's why there might be a difference in sound quality. Don't know if it's going to be better or worse. I just don't know. But this episode I needed to get out, this weekend. I happen to be in Florida for an important business trip. And that business trip is also a pleasure trip because the pleasure comes from the business. The business is pleasure. I am at my first official meeting with the other writers on the Larry Boy movie, and I'm very excited about that. I can't say much about any of that, but this was a fun meeting because it was a face-to-face, and we got to know each other a little bit, and I can't wait to continue working on this. But anyway, yeah, wanted to get this episode out, and so I thought, well, I got some time here in the hotel room, and I am putting together this episode that is actually stitched together from three episodes of the YouTube channel. And on that YouTube channel, I do book reviews sometimes. If you haven't heard it before, I do book reviews sometimes where I ask the question, is it worth reading? Because so many people say that Christian comics, Christian novels, Christian science fiction, Christian fantasy, Christian pop culture isn't worth reading. And my rule kind of has been, if the person is a contemporary of me, I'm not going to answer that question with a no. If the answer to the question, is it worth reading, is no, then I am not touching it. I'm just not going to. I mean, why would I? There is no reason for me to put out any more negativity. The only reason that I would probably go against that would be to warn people against something that I feel needs to be warned against. For example, if there was the Christian comic equivalent of, say, a Madame Web, then I might get out there in front of that and say, hey, this is out there. It's and lots of people are seeing it, but you don't need to. But even then, it would have to be pretty bad, either theologically or I don't know what other reason there would be for it to be pretty bad, for me to say, is it worth reading? No. So you know I'm saying yes for all three of these things. But, you know, the idea is hopefully that you listen to why I say yes to all these things, and then you can maybe be convinced to go and check it out yourself. Now, I will also say a disclaimer here. Two of these three were by people that I know. There's J.S. Earls and there's Louis Serrano, but they're still really good. Now, I don't know the third guy, Doug Tenapel, who did Creature Tech. That's the third book that I'm going to be talking about. I've never met him. I've never interacted with him. I have friends who have met him and interacted with him. So while I have never interacted with him myself, I certainly would love to if given the chance. And I'd love to have him on the podcast to even maybe talk about what it is to him to be a Christian creator, especially a Christian creator who is working on things that have wide appeal, like Earthworm Jim and that sort of thing. But if that is something that ever is going to happen, that is something that is going to happen in the future and not right now. No, right now, I'm just going to talk about his book and review it. And I hope you enjoy these three comic books by Christian creators that I highly, highly endorse. Is it worth reading? 1,000 times, yes. I'm Ben Avery, and in this episode of Is It Worth Reading, I'm going to be talking about the graphic novel Samson the Nazarite. Hey there, I'm Ben Avery, and this is Strangers and Aliens, which is an audio and video podcast feed, video feed, where we explore the connection between science fiction and spirituality, between fantasy and faith, between imagination and Christianity. And the graphic novel I'm about to talk about today is something that just... It combines all of them all together. I mean, this is, it's called Samson the Nazarite. It is the story of Samson from the book of Judges. And it is an imaginative retelling of his story, of Samson's story. And like I said, it just kind of encapsulates all of that. The one difference being, you know, when you're talking about Bible stories, you're not talking about fantasy and science fiction. It's more of a historical fiction. And historical fiction, I feel like, does fit into the speculative fiction spectrum, in a sense, because it is, to me anyway, there's a lot of similarities between fantasy and historical fiction, because both of them are creating a new world for you to step into. The difference being, in fantasy, it's a world that never existed and never will, and with historical fiction, it is a world that has existed in the past, and the idea of stepping into historical fiction is to allow yourself to experience what it may have been like when things happen. It's never going to be an exact one-to-one, this is exactly what it was like. That's just never going to happen. But it is a unique way of, it's a unique form of storytelling that has its own skill set that needs to be developed in order to do it well. And one of the parts of the skill set is research. One of them is to be able to step into yourself as a writer, into that place and time, put yourself into the shoes or sandals of someone who existed in that place and time. And I always feel when I'm working on a project that has to do with just anyone, any kind of historical reality, there is a responsibility to translate it well. And you want to present emotional truth, but you also want to present historical truth. And you want to do it in such a way that you have a narrative truth that you're able to follow as a reader. And so that's something that Samson the Nazarite, I feel like, does well. Now, Samson the Nazarite was created by a writer named Luis Serrano. And he created this. He's someone that I've been watching this as this project has come to fruition. And it was really great when I was able to finally like open the envelope that came to my doorstep and find this book inside. Finally, it's like all collected. It's done. It's in full color. And I was very excited to get it because, like I said, I've been watching this as he's been working on it. This is something that I met him. I had him come on over the podcast because there was a thing called the Gideon Film. Boy, I'm going to butcher the title of the place, but it's a Gideon Film Festival, basically. And we did a comic book contest, and he was a part of that comic book contest where he scripted something, and it was about Gideon. And so I was able to meet him through that. And then we've kind of stayed in contact over the years. And when he finally contacted me and said this was ready, and he asked me, did I want to see a copy? I'm like, of course I want to see a copy. And so I finally got it in my hands. And I know that he sent it to me because he was looking for a blurb. And I did send him a blurb because, you know, I really did like this. And in fact, let me go ahead and read what I wrote about Samson the Nazarite from my blurb. Here's what I wrote. A fantastic work of biblical fiction, Luis Serrano's Samson beautifully adapts the action and heart of the biblical story with gorgeous, energetic artwork and a script that delves deep into this complex and captivating man from Scripture. (Laughs)
Actually, I guess I don't need to say anything else for the video, do I? Because I kind of said everything right there. But it is. I mean, all those things that I said are things that I really felt when I read it, after I had read it. He really did do a good job of creating that historical fiction portal that you're able to step through and able to kind of experience what life was like. Now, I've done some research into the Samson story because I want to do my own version of Samson. That's nothing like this. It's a sideways retelling, not a sideways in the sense of the biblical truth and the biblical events, but sideways in the sense of a narrative point of view that you may not, usually think of following when you're following the story of Samson. The narrative point of view for this is just following the story of Samson, and you know, it's got all of his family members in it, and it brings into all these different relationships, and it brings in the whole idea of what's going on with the Philistines, and he does a good job of creating an historical backdrop that is interesting and as accurate as possible. There is not a lot of information that I've been able to find so far about that particular period of time in biblical history. And so there are some things that you do have to kind of create in order to build a narrative structure that is going to be satisfying for a modern audience who is used to modern storytelling. Because you have to remember, when you're reading the Bible, the Bible's narrative structure is the narrative structure of a whole nother culture, almost a whole nother world. And so the way that they were structuring the narrative, they weren't sitting down and saying, what is the best way to create a three-act narrative that follows this chronological order. Now, there is a chronological order that gets followed in the biblical accounts, but there's also a thematic structure that goes along with that. And so sometimes things are taken out of order and done in such a way that you're following these kind of thematic, emotional, or intellectual theming, instead of just the event. Now, Samson is pretty much event when you're looking at the account in Judges, but it's not a three-act structure. And so what you have to do as a biblical storyteller is you have to kind of take a look at the events, build the events out, and then also, especially when you're doing anything of length like this, you have to put in some extra things that allow you to build the world and allow people to understand what the world was like at the time. And so there's a lot that goes into a work like this, and it succeeds. I really feel like this is a successful account of the Samson story. Now, the other thing that's interesting about this is the art style that gets used in this. Now, it is a very clean art style. It's a very modern art style. It's a very American art style as well. And it's definitely, you know, following along that American comic book art style. But what I love about this is that it is not, as you can see right here, if you're looking at the cover, it's not a big, bulky Hercules, Incredible Hulk, or even Superman. This is a lean, strong man who is supernaturally strong. And it actually kind of takes the idea that I've talked about in the past, where you take a look at Henry Cavill, even Christopher Reeve. These are men who built up the muscle mass so they could be Superman and they could look super strong, super tough. And then people complain because Wonder Woman didn't have that beefy muscle mass that maybe she should have if she was going to be as strong as she is. Until you consider, Wonder Woman is a mythological origin and it's magical. And so for her to have like this supernatural, superhuman strength, she doesn't necessarily need the physiology of a regular human that a regular human would have to have in order to have that same strength level. And so that's what you have here, is you have this guy, he's strong, he's healthy, but he is not beefy. He is not a bodybuilder. And I really appreciate that about the artwork style that was chosen for this. So there was a lot of work that went into this on Lewis's end. And then he brought in these artists to work on these different issues. this is violent. This is muscular. This is Conan-esque in some ways, the style of violence and action that's happening here, but it's violence and action that carries consequences with it. And the other thing, you know, going back to my little blurb that I did, I said, the script delves deep into this complex and captivating man from scripture. Samson is a complex and captivating man to me. The thing about Samson in scripture is he's not someone to be emulated necessarily, especially not early on. I don't feel like the things he was doing when he was showing off his strength or when he was, being dishonest with Delilah. I don't feel like those are things that the scripture is endorsing. They are events that the scripture is reporting. And there's a difference between endorsement and reporting. And the difference is, here's a story as it happened. What can you learn from that? Maybe the lesson is don't do that, okay? If Samson had just done a couple things differently, things would not have gone for him the way that it did. If he just kept his eye on God and kept his eye, that's a bad example to use. Although if he kept his eye on God, maybe he wouldn't have lost his eye. But anyway, her eyes. Anyway, he's not someone to emulate in some of his early actions. Now, he did keep his hair and he did keep his vows. And so he was able to keep his strength. And so there is that. But then he also did some things that were not, I don't think God really was very pleased with him about. And one of those things was just allowing himself to be tricked by Delilah. And he would have very simply been able to sidestep that if he hadn't lied to her. If he had just said no, 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 and kept saying no, 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 would have gone a lot better for him. But instead, he lied to her. And in doing that, he actually gave her, I think, a little bit of an opening because he lied. And then she did what he said. And then he lied again. And she did what he said again. And for some reason, when he told her the truth, I don't know why he didn't think that she was going to repeat that. And it's possible that when he told her the truth, maybe he didn't quite believe it himself. I don't know. That's me projecting onto the story, and that's not something that I would ever add into the story or ever teach about. But there are things that I would wonder about and talk about in conversation where I wonder if this would have happened, if this had happened, would that have happened, that kind of a thing. But the thing about Samson, and it's a really cool scene in the graphic novel, and that is that final moment where he relies on God. And that's in some ways, I heard this, I'm not sure if this is true, but I've heard that some Jewish scholarship looks at the word gibberum, which it means a hero who has relied on God, and that he is not referred to as a gibberum until that moment at the end where he totally relies on God, gets his strength back, even though he had his hair cut, and is able to bring down the house on the Philistines. And I love that idea that he really wasn't a hero. I mean, you can take that potential Hebrew teaching that I never actually saw a primary source about, let's put it that way. You could take that or leave that. But the truth is, he finally, at the end, where he was at the depths of everything, and don't get me wrong, he was really at the end then, because what he did ended up killing him as well. But that's where he said, I'm going to trust in you. I'm going to rely on you. Would you? And he actually asks God. I feel like he's humbled himself, he's been humiliated, and they've taken his eyes, they've taken his hair, and they've put him, to work or whatever, but he's been humiliated, but now he's humble. When he talks to God and speaks to God, and when he does have his strength restored, it comes after he's humbled himself before the Lord. And so, yeah, the character of Samson is a very complex and an interesting character. And he's a character that I think would be hard to do well. But guess what? Lewis nails it. He does. He nails it. He does it well. So if you're interested in getting this, you can go to samsonstory.com. And if you go to samsonstory.com, that will be a place to order this graphic novel directly from the creator. And I recommend it. I really do. Is it worth reading? Yes. Resoundingly so. So I do want to thank you for spending time with me here on our YouTube channel and for talking with me about geeky stuff like comic books and biblical history. And until next time, I just want to say, please hit like, please hit subscribe. And even if you don't hit like or subscribe, I do want to wish you, but I especially want to wish you, if you did hit like and subscribe, Godspeed. Hey, welcome to Strangers and Aliens. I'm Ben, Ben Avery, and today we are taking a look at finally Pistol Fist, Freedom Fighter, and we are asking that age-old question, sort of, is it worth reading? Hey, I'm Ben, Ben Avery, and thank you so much for joining me here on the feed to talk about geeky stuff. This is a podcast and a video feed about just that intersection between faith and fantasy, Christianity and creativity, science fiction and spirituality. And this is another graphic novel that kind of hits almost all six of those points. And the only reason I say almost, no, it does. It does. I was going to say, is it more fantasy? Is it more science fiction? But it is definitely, it touches on both. There is it's science fantasy, so to speak. Actually, it's not just science fantasy. It's kind of historical science fantasy. Historical sci-fi fantasy fiction with a steampunk edge to it. So steampunk, historical sci-fi / fantasy with a masked superhero. So superhero, steampunk, historical sci-fi fantasy. That's the genre of this graphic novel here. And really, it does hit kind of all those points. Now, one of the reasons why it hits that steampunk-ish vibe is because it is historical fiction, takes place during the 1700s, takes place during the Revolutionary War. And so the high-tech stuff in there is kind of steampunk-ish. It's not necessarily steam-powered. There is, you know, some cool sci-fi stuff going on. It brings in one of my favorite historical people, as far as like when I was in school, if I had the opportunity, I was going to do my report about this historical person. It's name affinity. Okay. I mean, I'll just throw it out there. It's name affinity because Ben Franklin, Benjamin Franklin, and I'm Ben Avery, Benjamin Avery. But anyway, that's why I like that guy. And he's here, he's in here, and he's doing science stuff and he's doing science fiction stuff. And he is helping out a superhero who needs help. And it's fun. It's fun stuff. It's the science fiction fantasy shenanigans that they get into is fun. But then there's also just some very meaningful moments, especially as you're looking in that at that time period and some of the things that were going on. And there's some meaningful moments as far as who's under the mask. I'm not going to tell you who's under the mask, but I will tell you this. He's related to someone in history as well. And so it's that historical fiction in the sense that there are historical events that happened the way that we know them. And then there are other things, some of the fictional events that take place in a way that won't go into the history books. And so we don't have to rewrite our history in order to enjoy this story. It's not an alternative history. I mean, it is technically speaking an alternate history, but it's not like setting up a world where, you know, the Britons won the war or something like that. Instead, it is kind of that sidestepping of the history books in order to write that alternate history that takes place in between the lines and in the margins of the history books. And so I enjoyed it. I enjoy it quite a bit. And that's one of the reasons why I like it, is because it does fit in that way. And J.S. Earls, who is a friend of mine, very close friend, we've known each other for years and years and years and years. I was around when he was publishing this the first time around. It has been republished. This is the 15th anniversary edition. At one point, I wrote a story, a Pistol Fist story. It was just an outline. I didn't get to the script place, but there was some plans for some things. The plans fell through. I didn't get a chance to do the story I wanted to do, but it would have been a lot of fun if I had been able to do it. I think it would have been a lot of fun for the readers, it might have been a lot of fun for the for J.S. Earls even, but it definitely would have been a lot of fun for me. Now, I do have a connection to this book. J.S. Earls, he doesn't even know that there's a connection to this book, and but it just maybe part of a shared universe, and we'll get to that. We'll get to that in just a minute. But anyway, this is when it's that alternate history. It's not quite Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. It's it's got a plausible historicity. I don't know if that's a real word, but the historical context makes it plausible, if not possible, because of that kind of steampunk influence and that sci-fi influence. Basically, what you have here is you have someone who, in the midst of the Revolutionary War, there is an escalation of war machines. There's an escalation of the weapons of war. And there is some nefarious experimentation going on. And the nefarious experimentation happens to our main character. And he ends up losing part of his arm and getting it replaced with a pistol. Hence the name, Pistol Fist. Now, it's not just any pistol. It doesn't shoot slugs. It's an energy thing, and there's some cool stuff going on. But then he ends up, he's got a mask. He becomes this masked vigilante, and he is out there in the Revolutionary War dealing with conflicts between the colonists and the people from across the pond, the English soldiers. So, yeah. So, yeah. No one's going to be convinced that this is a possible conspiracy theory that happened, but it does work well in the historical context, and it works well as historical fiction. When you consider this as historical fiction, it works in the sense that it creates a scene that takes you back then and takes you back there and allows you to interact with these characters as a reader, especially the real characters. The historical characters, but then also the fictional ones. It allows you to interact with them in a way that makes you feel like, you know, you are getting something out of this historically. And so while, yes, sure, the events never happened, there is some emotional truth to what's going on around the events, if not historical truth, what's going on around the events. And so I recommend it. I really do. Now, who does this feature that helps this become a shared universe? Well, My favorite historical character, Benjamin Franklin. He also appears in Time Flies Volume 2, Turtle Trouble, because he helped with Bushnell's Turtle, which is one of the first submarines ever used in war, if not the first submarine ever used in actual combat. There's another Benjamin in Turtle Trouble, Benjamin Banneker, but that's a whole different story. And I really, my original title that did not get through, Zondervan wisely chose to veto the title that I recommended. But the title I was working with when we first started scripting that volume, because we were scripting it before any of the books had even been published, and we were scripting it before we really had an idea of what the titling method was going to be. I was going to call it All About the Benjamins. And they were right. They were right. Let's just say that. Turtle Trouble, that works. It works. Pyramid Peril is the first one. Turtle Trouble, there's battle between it. So you can see kind of the pattern there. So I'm not saying that it's a shared universe. I'm just saying it could be a shared universe. It could quite possibly be that Benjamin Franklin helped out Pistol Fist and then also turned around and had to deal with some time traveling flies. I'm just saying it's a possibility. I'm not saying it's the reality. It's a possibility. Just like this book is not about reality. It's about possibility. No, it's not about possibility. It's not possible. But it is fun and it's worth reading. So that's the answer to the question. Is it worth reading? Yes. J.S. Earls is a good friend of mine. I'm not just saying that because he's a good friend of mine. I'm saying that because this is a good graphic novel and it has something to say. And it has something to say about the time period then, but it has something to say about us now as well. And so I would say, go get it, check it out on Amazon, check it out. You can, you know, look up J.S. Earls, find his website. I could not. Point being, check it out. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. And so until next time, I just want to say thank you so much for listening. Please hit like, please hit subscribe, and also definitely check out strangersandaliens.com where you'll find blog posts and you'll find audio episodes. And yeah, if you do all that, I say thank you. In fact, I just say thank you for just spending time with me right now. And I also just want to say, as you go your way, and as you're scrolling through the videos on YouTube or you're doom scrolling on Facebook, whatever it is that you're doing right now that brought you to this screen at this time, Godspeed. Welcome back to Strangers and Aliens, a podcast and a video feed about the intersection of science fiction and spirituality, of fantasy and faith, of creativity and Christianity. And today we're going to talk about a graphic novel that it does it all. All those things I just mentioned, all six of them, they're all in here. It's one of my favorite graphic novels of all time. It's Creature Tech by Doug Tenable. Hey, I'm Ben Avery. I am a comic book writer. I am a comic book fan. I am a Christian. And that's why this graphic novel I'm about to talk about is something I'm very, very excited to talk about. Creature Tech by Doug Tenable. Tenable. I'm not sure exactly how to say his name. I've never met him. I would really love to talk with him. He does a lot of stuff that is just super imaginative. The artwork and the art style that he works with is just astounding to me. It just grabs my imagination. It just grabs my eye. And it's something that when I worked with Tim Barron, I was so excited to work with Tim Barron because there's a very, very Doug Tenable-ish style to Tim Barron. And so the graphic novels I was able to do with him, I feel like this is the closest I'm ever going to get to being Doug Tenable. Now, Doug Tenable, he's one of those guys, though, who has it all. He's able to write, he's able to draw, and he's able to produce something that is just plain amazing. And this graphic novel right here has been at the top of my list of Christian created graphic novels of all time. And when I say top of my list, I do mean that. I mean, this is the number one Christian created graphic novel that I have ever read in my entire life. And quite possibly, considering how old I am right now, maybe I'll never read another one that's as great as this one. And there's reasons that we'll get into, but I did a list of my top 10 or 15 graphic novels of all time that were by Christian creators. I did this for a blog 15 years ago, maybe, I don't know. It was a long, long time ago, but it was the same kind of thing that I'm doing here where I'm asking, you know, is it worth reading? I did this blog post to say these are 10 or 15, I can't remember. It was on Blogspot, if you remember Blogspot. I think it's still out there. I know my blog is still exists. Every couple of years I've gone to see, is my blog still there? And it is. So Blogspot still exists. I'm just not sure if people use it or anymore. But I did it for that, to do the same kind of thing, to say, hey, there is good stuff out there, because the same kind of things are being said about all Christian creative arts. People are saying that Christian comics aren't worth looking at, aren't worth reading. People are saying that Christian books aren't worth reading, aren't worth taking time to or spending money on. People are saying Christian movies are not worth talking about. If they are worth talking about, it's because they're so bad. They're all so bad. And they paint these really broad strokes. The unfortunate thing about broad strokes is it covers up the fine strokes of the things that are out there that are high quality. And so when you paint with those broad strokes, the truth is, and this is my theory, and I've brought this up before, I don't know when, and so it's quite possible you never heard me say this before, but I believe that the truth is that the same percentage of awful art that you find in Christian circles is the same percentage that you find just in general. I think the difference is in Christian circles, those circles are smaller. And so the pool is smaller and it's easier to see. And it feels like there are fewer things that are good. And that's because there are fewer things that are good, because the circle is smaller than that broad secular circle. And so I think that the law of averages or whatever, I don't know, but I think that that's how it works in my opinion, is that no matter where you look, no matter where you go, there is good, there is bad, and there are people who are trying to move from bad to good. And I do think that Christian artists get more discouraged than artists who are not working in Christian circles, because the people who should be supporting them are painting those broad strokes and saying, it's no good. It's no good. So anyway, I did that blog post. getting off of my soapbox now and returning back to this review of this graphic novel. This was the number one. This was the number one, and it still is the number one graphic novel by a Christian creator. Now, I don't know where I would place this on the spectrum of just graphic novels in general. It's in my top five. I know it would go in my top five. I'm just not sure if it would be the first, second, third, fourth, fifth. Some of it would depend on the mood that I'm in. But it's up there. Honestly, for me, it's up there with Ronin, which by Frank Miller, which is one of my top five, with Mouse by Art Spiegelman, one of my top five, with Swamp Thing. I'm not going to go into all of them, but anyway, this is up there. This is definitely up there in that top five. I haven't had the time, and I really don't like ranking things in order because it's hard. It's hard to do. Anyway, this is up there in the top five, but as far as like books that were created by Christians, that's this right here. Now, there's a number of reasons for it. One is just the artistic imagination that goes into this. And I said that this encompasses all the stuff. It encompasses the spirituality, the creativity, the faith, and then it also encompasses the fantasy, the science fiction, and the creativity. And the way that it, I mean, it's a science fiction book. Basically, it's about this guy who encounters this thing that becomes a symbiotic relationship with him, and then he goes on strange and wild adventures that have to do with the Shroud of Turin and aliens, and a scene that is just one of the most affecting scenes that I have honestly seen in a comic book. I just love it so much. There's actually a number of what I would call haunting moments, and I shouldn't say I would call them that. My professors at a writing program that I went to call it the haunting moment, that every screenplay needs to have a haunting moment, and I would expand that out then to every book, maybe every comic book needs to have a haunting moment, which is something that sticks with you out of context. It's something that sticks with you because it was just a really nice moment, or a really emotional moment, or a really raw moment, or a really exciting moment. And there's a number of them here. There's one moment in here where it's just this guy, an alien, and a friend, and they're fishing. And it's a really nice moment, okay? And so this is just, it's to me, there's a lot of things that just work for me. It's full of imagination. It has gruesome creatures, which I love. It has potty humor, which I won't say I love potty humor, but I do appreciate some good potty humor, and I'll laugh at some good potty humor. And it's also super artistic. I mean, his control of a pen and the ink, it just creates this tone, and it's a gritty tone, but it's a homemade tone, you know, and it just, there's just something to it that just feels, you know, he's just spilling the ink onto the page, but he's spilling it onto the page in a chaotic order. And that's, I think chaotic order, it would be my description of his art style. There is also, I mean, it's irreverent. It is. I mentioned the Shroud of Turin. Okay. And, there's some stuff with that where I'm like, okay, but it's also spiritually relevant. And there's just a lot to this book. There's action, there's adventure, there's aliens. It's a spiritual sci-fi story, and it just touches me. It just reaches in and says, hey, Ben, this was made for you. And it wasn't made for me, but at the same time, it was actually made for me. Like, it just checks off all the boxes. It does have, and I don't want to give too much away, but I still need to talk about it. I don't want to give too much away about the plot, but there is a moment that I really want to talk about that is just, it's the most interesting and impactful alien version of the Christ sacrifice. And I would say metaphorical alien version of the Christ sacrifice, but it's not meant to be metaphorical. It's of a kind with Aslan and the White Witch, in the sense that it is Christ appearing to another world in the way that they need to see him in order to relate. And so you have Aslan as the lion in a world of talking animals. And here you have this moment where, again, I don't want to say too much, but it just reminds me of that Aslan moment because it's not meant to be just a metaphorical. This is not just a Christ character. It's not the trope of the sacrificial hero. It is actually someone realizing what he's seeing is what he's known from Christ. You know, anyway, the point is, it's an effective scene, and it's an affecting scene as well. It's effective and affecting, and it has stuck with me over all of these years. And I will go a few years between looking at this, you know, but that moment has stuck with me. And it's weird, and it's the kind of thing that I know that there would be some people who would look at it and read it and just be like, I don't think that that's appropriate. And they might be right. I don't know, but it was affecting. It was. And so, highly, highly recommended. It's just such a fully imaginative book. And there's, like I said, it just checks all the boxes. Aliens, check. Action, check. Meaningful spirituality, check. Faithful Christianity, check. It's all there. It's all there, and I enjoyed this book. Now, there, I have this edition. I don't know if it's the first edition or not. It might be the first edition. Doesn't matter if it is or not, but this edition is from 2002, okay? I mean, this is a 20-year-old book. However, there is a newer edition that's available on Amazon that has some extra materials in it. I think it has some sketches and things like that. But I'm always just so jealous of creators who can write and draw so powerfully because they come with an advantage, which is what's on their mind can go on the page much, much easier than, well, someone like me who writes a comic book script and hands it off to an artist. And so then I'm trying to put the thing into the mind of the artist, and then the artist is able to take what's in their mind from what I put on the page to put it on the page. And you have, although with that, I will say, especially when I was working with Sherwin Schwarzrock and Mike Miller, both those guys, and Sergio Gariello, and yeah, and Tim Barron actually too, when I would script something for him, a lot of times I would have it in my head and I'd imagine it in my head and they would draw it better than I imagined. And so, you know, maybe there's some moments where he was able to, like, in his long library of books that he's done, he said, oh, I had this image in my head. And then when I drew it, it actually came out better than what I had in my head. But I don't know. But I am always jealous because, you know, when you have that 1-2 punch, you're able to eliminate a middleman. So anyway, Creature Tech, Doug Tenable. Is it worth reading? Yes, yes, yes. A million times. Yes. I mean, not that you're going to be able to read it a million times because there's not enough time probably in life to be able to do that. But I really enjoyed this. I really endorse this, and I recommend it. So yeah. So thank you for spending time with me. I do want to remind you to please, please, please head to strangersandaliens.com where you can find information about our audio feed, although you can also find our audio podcast in all the places where you find podcasts. And please hit like, hit subscribe. And until next time, I just want to say thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching, and Godspeed. You've been listening to the Strangers and Aliens podcast, hosted by Ben Avery,
Evan David,
Steve McDonald, and Dr. Jason O'Neill. Our music was composed and mixed by Tim Leffel.
We'd love for you to join the conversation by going to our website at strangersandaliens.com, where you'll find show notes, articles, reviews, and more.
You can also email us directly at podcast@strangersandaliens.com.
Or you can join our social media conversations by following us on Twitter, where we are at Strange and Alien, or liking us on Facebook at facebook.com/strangersandaliens.
Or leave us a voicemail by calling the Strangers and Aliens hotline. That number is 1-804-37-ALIEN.
And once again, thanks for listening. I guess I don't need to say anything else for the video, do I?